always remember it's a privilege to work at CCI. Don't take it for granted. The synergy is wonderful. Take advantage of the synergy and learn from each other. It's a wonderful place.
I'm Natalie Nadomigel, and this is CCI in Chin, in our words. For today's episode, you'll be hearing an interview that my supervisor, Kelly Johnson, and I did with Season Say. Season was a conservation scientist at the Canadian Conservation Institute from 1984 to 2018. What is a conservation scientist, you might be wondering? They work on projects aimed at broadening the understanding of heritage materials, as well as test and research different conservation techniques. Season, in particular, is well known for her work on ink, textiles, and testing sensitivity to light exposure. In this interview, we talked in a more general sense about her work ethic and how CCI has evolved over the years. Stay tuned after the interview to hear an excerpt from Season's retirement party. We begin with Season talking about her ability to bring people together.
I think I'm one of those people who see, once I know what a person can do or know a piece of information, I see what this information can do for like a client or a colleague or something. So when I see something good, I see, okay, well, this person really need to know because it's really good for me. This person will really appreciate that. So I always like to put those together, whether it is like a good paper for a colleague that who might want it, or for me, this person really need to meet this person because they can come together. So I see synergy. I'm one of those people, I don't know, I just like that. When I have a good thing or when I know a good thing, I want to share it with people. So that goes with the way I work with clients or, you know, just relating with colleagues. So I like that and how I've developed my career.
That's interesting. Were you born in Canada?
No, I was born in China, but then I went to Hong Kong when I was very young.
And where was your first location in Canada? Was
St. John's, Newfoundland.
It was. Oh, interesting. That's why you went to Memorial then?
Yeah.
How old were you when you first came?
I was 14.
And then from there to Ottawa?
Actually, from St. John's, I went to Waterloo to study for 5 years in Waterloo University. And then from there, I came to Carleton to do my master's degree. And then, yeah, as soon as I finished my research, I got the job at CCI and I started in 1984.
And how would you qualify the training that you received?
I think I had the best training. It's a combination of, you know, the 2 summers I spent at the Marine Research Lab in Torbay, Newfoundland. That was the best training I had in lab skills, lab techniques, just to do the mundane, repetitive stuff, how to have good techniques. So learn that. And all my work term experiences taught me how, you know, just broaden my field. And then my 2 years training in my master's degree taught me how to do research, again, how to do lab work very carefully. And when I came here, I had the great fortune to work with Helen Burgess, which really helped me for the next 10 years.
And that's where you got more training, I guess, on learning about conservation?
Yeah, Helen was the best mentor. Like, I cannot think of anyone better because she's well-recognized in the conservation field. Everyone knows that she is sharp. She is a good teacher. So I learned a lot of that from her. And all the lab skills that I learned, how to do DPs, you know, like a degree of polymerization for cellulose, all of that I learned from her. So I owe my start in conservation, mainly to her. Then, of course, I got to know other people, you know, like Stefan Michalski. So all these people helped me shape how I look at conservation and how to approach my work and how to deal with
people. It's such a blessing too, isn't it, to have people that share their knowledge like that and to be able to benefit from their knowledge and adapt it to your reality as well and to your needs for your job.
But, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why, because I've received so much, that's why I want a gift, because I would not have the start of this without these people helping me. Then now that I have something, I need to give. You know, that's how you benefit, then you give back.
Yeah.
I think what I give is what I receive. So, and I think I can give because I don't have a lot of people in other places don't have the security of their job. So, you know, what their security is what they know. And I think it's, it as Canadian, as workers of the federal government, I feel very privileged that we have the security of the work, that I don't have to feel that, oh, I need to keep everything because my job depends on it. I'm able to give freely, not only to Canadians, but also internationally. I think in other places, you know, you have to protect your knowledge because people can take advantage of that. And I've met colleagues that are also so generous to people in the RCE. They are so generous that I said, if they are so generous, they tell me everything. I have to do the same thing. I have to pass it on. So, but I think it's the privilege of the job security. And I'm very thankful for that, right?
Do you think that that generosity with knowledge and that interest in teaching is something that kind of extends to CCI? Because of that security that you were saying comes from working as an agency for the government, people have a little bit more of that comfort, so they're able to share more and teach more?
Absolutely. I think, you know, CCI has a reputation of very generous with knowledge, right? All my colleagues are very generous with. So I'm not the only one. I'm just part of this whole body who is very generous with sharing and giving. And because of that security, because of, you know, we don't need to kind of claw ourselves up, you know. And I think that is a gift that the Canadian government has given not only to the Canadian institutions, but to the world because of this security. We can afford to be generous. Because we have been given so much. And I think it was, yeah, Stefan reminded me, I think I talked about that in the speech, that we are so blessed to have CCI. We've been given so much. Really, the only way to give back is not only to preserve our own heritage, is to spread that knowledge to help other, the rest of the world, you know, in whatever capacity we can, to help them preserve their heritage. And I think that is a gift that Canadian government, the taxpayers, are giving to the world, and they might not even know it.
Well, hopefully this podcast will be a way to promote that and let Canadians know about what CCI does and how fortunate we are to have in our country an organization like this and people willing to share their knowledge and help preserve Canadians' history. How long would you say it took you to feel comfortable in the world of conservation?
I started going to conferences, and that's also due to the generosity of CCI. I went to the first conference, 1988. It was this paper conference hosted by CCI. Actually, Helen Burgess was the one who hosted the paper symposium, 1988. And that was probably my first conference, and I gave my first paper there because at that point, I had 4 years of data on enzymes, how they perform and things like that, and what the effect on paper. So we had a paper, and that was my first paper that I presented. Helen was the co-author, but I can remember the nervousness of that, you know, in front of all these who's who in paper conservation. But I think that was really important that Helen had connected me with some of these who's who in the conservation field. So I think that's probably my first experience where I think I know something more about enzymes than a lot of people. And then I start working with Sherry in the paper lab on how to use enzymes, you know, just testing enzymes on treatments. And so I think that is probably the first where that was 4 years afterwards that I start feeling a little bit more comfortable in this one thing. I still don't know a lot about, I started to know a little bit about conservation, paper conservation, and treatments, and I did the analysis using a degree of polymerization. So I've been sort of just in the background doing sort of the basic analysis testing and things like that, right? So I always feel that it's important to start from the bottom. You know, all the ins and outs and the flaws and the strengths of different analysis. So when you present something, you know how solid, how certain you can be in what you say because you know what you've done. So I think all of those 5 years is a really good foundation. And then from then on, Helen also gotten involved with a number of larger projects, and I started getting involved in those paper research projects, and then I started getting involved. So then I broadened a little bit by little bit from different projects, and I worked with Helen for a good 10 years. So all of those time was, it just built the basis. And I, of course, I read her papers, I listened to how she talks, and I know how good she is as a teacher. So I learned a lot from that too. How does she communicate? Not only does she know how to do it, how to summarize the results, how to write it, how to present it, like the whole process from, you know, the thinking, the doing, you know, like the whole process. Yeah, I learned it from her.
So you started working mainly with paper, but then eventually, in your words, I'm going to refer to your speech at your party many times, you'll see. But you then said that you made the switch from paper to textile. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? What was the interest there? Was it a need, or how did that happen?
There was a need. And also at the time, probably around 1990, I started realizing, you know, I want to work not so much under Helen, because I've built up some knowledge and some technical skills. I thought, well, I could apply that, what I learned, to textiles. And at the time, there was no one to help study textiles or in conservation science, right? So in CCI, there was no one. And one of the questions from at the time, I think there were the focus groups. And the focus group was, I remember it was 1995 in the Calgary focus groups. It became clear that we need someone to focus on textiles conservation, treatments and things like that. But one of the big problem was silk. There was no one in CCI at the time to look at deterioration of silk. How do you measure it? What is the effect of treatment on silk? You know, what happens? So there was no one to do that. So when I proposed that maybe I can look at the characterization of silk to CCI management, and it was accepted. It was actually then we spent the next 5 years developing, first of all, technique to analyze silk. Because prior to that, it's all mechanical. You need, you know, the Instron to test the strength of fibers. But at the time, we don't have an Instron. We don't have a control environment to test silk. So the other way was, well, we do what we're good at, which is degree of polymerization, which measure the molecular weight of silk. You know, so then we spend the next 5 years. We have a large project looking at silk deterioration and the effect of treatment on silk. So we had a whole project, was 5 years, and we presented that work.
Do you think there's a reason why silk hadn't been studied up until then?
Well, first of all, there are techniques that are out there, but we didn't think that it was sensitive enough. And then we want to find the technique, and the technique of using molecular weight analysis was new at the time. That was 1995, so it was relatively new. So we thought, if we want to study silk, we need to master that technique so that we could study the effect of treatments and light aging and this sort of thing. So we thought, well, that would be a good start. Because if you want to study a material, you first of all need to know how to analyze it, to measure changes in them, right? So, and you need something that is sensitive. At the time, Greg Young was also considering using thermal analysis, but he had other priorities. So he started looking at silk using thermal analysis, but other priorities took him away and he was not able to get back to it. But he had full intention to actually develop thermal analysis to study silk.
That would be a different way of doing it from what you developed. Okay.
So now, maybe today with our new scientists here, maybe that's something they could look into using thermal analysis.
We just gave someone a research project.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Can you explain to us how conservation science fits within CCI for people who might not know so much about it?
Conservation science, if we were to look at, there is the analytical side, and then there is the sort of the prevention and the environmental aspects of conservation that is the focus of the work by the preservation services, right? So there's two aspects of the science, and I think both of them are considered science. One is, you know, sort of the micro aspect, looking at materials. So I always think that conservation science is to support what conservators do, because they're the ones who are handling the objects. Now, there is one aspect of conservation science, which is sort of the scholastic part of it, where you study materials, you know, artist material, and that's a whole different area, which is on its own scholarship. So its own value, that's different. But the day-to-day analysis of things, I always see it as, how do I help a conservator to either treat an object or care for an object or plan exhibition for an object? Like, I'm just thinking of my own work with microfade testing. I never thought that the testing itself would be the focus. Those are just steps to help a conservator do their work, make more knowledgeable decisions, and make more accurate choice, better choices, right? So I always think of my work from my point of view, and I know other my colleagues feel the same way, that their work, while interesting and fascinating, they're there to help. We are to support conservators who are at the front line. And I think preservation services, all of the ingenuity that goes into it, is to preserve ultimately the object, but the conservators are the frontline people who are dealing with the objects. So I see it that way, that's my own conviction that I need to focus on doing my work very well, because I want the data, the information I produce is the best it can be and useful. Yeah, it has to be useful.
Do you find that aspect of your work fulfilling? Is that one of the things that you derive satisfaction from, that your work is going to support the work of others and other people are relying on you?
For me, it is. I know sometimes it's very easy, because you can get into one little nook or one detail that is so fascinating, you just keep following it. But then I have to pull myself back and say, wait a minute. So your time is spent, paid by the taxpayer, for a purpose. And I have to kind of hold myself back so that I can balance out what I do to satisfy my own curiosity and what I need for my job, right? So I have to hold back, because it's very easy, you know, like, the world is a fascinating place. So you can just easily just go into the one area and just keep going. And if you don't discipline yourself, it's just very easy.
Can you tell us a little bit how you see conservation science, how it changed throughout your career? You were working for SWCI for 34 years. In those 34 years, have you noticed major changes, or did the pendulum go from one side all the way to the other and then back somehow? Or could you explore that a little bit with us?
You know, when I first started 34 years ago, I think having a PhD is very rare. Like, David Grattan had a PhD, and so some people had, but some of our best scientists have bachelor degrees, but they were the most knowledgeable, very knowledgeable. But as time goes by, nowadays, that all of our new scientists all have PhDs, you know, so the degree of academic training has also increased.
How do you think that's changed the work that's done?
I think with the PhD training, you get a very in-depth training in one area. You know, you know a lot about one field. And so for new scientists, they then need to apply what they know in that one field. In conservation sciences, it's broad, it's varied, right? So, you know, you're not just looking at one plastic. Well, you're looking at plastic with many background, with many variations. So it's a challenge. And so I think the new scientists that we hire, you can see that they are also interested in not only in what they know very well, but they're also interested in how do I use this to study that? You know, so there's that curiosity. I think that's the key that you see in the new scientists that we have brought to CCI. They've got this curiosity and that love of materials, and be able to apply, and also being meticulous at the same time. So it's kind of hard that you have this, you have a broad view, but you have to be meticulous.
Maybe we can ask a little bit more about what CCI was like when you started to work.
Well, back then, things are very different. There were a lot of freedom. right? And I think when CCI started, and then you, when an organization begins, you need that freedom to explore and just to see people work together and not put too much restraint on it. The golden years where, you want to look at something, go ahead, do that, right? And it's great. And they were, at the time we were still synthesizing these toxic stuff, and we were eating in the lab. You have the lab here, and then there's a coffee table here, and okay, you drop what you did and come down, have a coffee, and go back, and like things like that. That was the health and safety is very different, and we work very like for our group at the time it was the conservation processes research. So we work very closely with conservators developing treatment, whether for paper textiles or archaeology, whatever. So we work. We're always back and forth, right? So there was a lot of synergy. And then as things later on in the years, we need to be more accountable. And I think it was some adjustment to us because you're so free. Okay, do whatever you want. And you just have to write a monthly report. Okay, you just have to tell your boss, what did you do last month? And that's it. And so now you still have some accountability, but later on it becomes you have to have key commitments. You have to say, well, what have you done? And the project proposals started coming, and then you have to write down, well, this is what you want to do. So it becomes gradually becomes, you can see, the accountability. You need to have more of that. And I think it's a necessary evil because, you can't just keep doing what you want. Like looking at myself as an example, I don't like writing things up. I just like to do it. So I would do it. And then there's a number of projects where I've got great data, but because I didn't have to publish it or no one pushes me to publish, it was just sitting there. And I ended up never publishing it. It was, we spent time on it and the data is good. So I really appreciate the discipline that came. Just the discipline to write it up for the reports because they're for clients, you have to do it. And then later on, the writing up, it just makes retrieving information so much easier for everyone. So that discipline comes, and I think that's probably the biggest change from the laissez-faire, do whatever you want, and then becomes... Ooh.
And when would you say the change started to occur, approximately?
About 20 years ago, I would say, yeah. Because we have to write proposals for the silk project. Well, what do you want to do? What do you plan to do this year? What did you do? So you have to report on the results, things like that. And I think in the 80s, it's the golden year because... the funding, there was no questions asked, just people were, everything was free. But later on, you have to be accountable.
That's interesting. Would you say that's one of the striking changes that occurred here at CCI throughout your career? Was this need to become a little bit more accountable and to be a little bit more structured in a sense?
Yeah. And also the field of conservation science has grown significantly over the last 20, 30 years, right? And with these European Union big projects, where you have multiple countries combining to do one, they have that kind of manpower that we don't here at CCI. So we actually learn to be very smart and doing things that are very targeted. Yeah, I think that is another field where when I first started, well, there was very little. So anything, it's a plus. So now we have to be very careful, very targeted. And I think CCI is known for our leadership in certain things. We excel in certain things. And I think we've done that very well. And I think over the last many years, we've learned to be very specific. Yeah, instead of, let's do more of this. No, we can't afford to do more of something else. Somebody else is doing it. The EU projects, they've got 10, 20 years, millions of euros pouring into those. Let them do those, right? So let's do things that are targeted either for Canadian collections or that is unique to us in Canada, which would also benefit other people. So I think the microfape project is one of those things where, we didn't develop it, but we have a need for it. So we use it and we take it and use it to benefit our Canadian clients. But at the same time, our knowledge also benefit other.
It's interesting how those global changes can have such an impact on what ends up being the work that you do.
I think 34 years ago, there are less institutions doing the work that we do. Then over the years, it has grown, and they have greater capacities to do some things. So we just became smarter, and we were good at some things, and we become better at those things, like, you know, in risk assessment, in dye analysis, and all of those things. So we become good at these, you know, like specific areas. And so we become center of excellence in those things, which I think it's important.
Has that changed the way that CCI is viewed around the world? Because now we're sort of becoming more specific in these areas?
People know the depth of knowledge. We have that reputation. So, and I think that's just how it should be, right? So you start off with flat, and then you got these bumps here that become greater knowledge, and then you got these very peaks of people with knowledge. And not that, I think we stop trying to be peaks everywhere, because we know we don't have that. Like, we're not, Canadian taxpayer didn't fund us for that. But in the areas that we're very good, let's encourage that. And I think that's what CCI has become, instead of this flat, overall good in a lot of things, specialize in certain things and let other people do other things. Like, great, you know? And the Argo Inc. project was another thing like that. I said, I'm not going to compete with the 20 country EU funded projects that are going on in Europe, but we have specific questions. So I'm going to use what they have learned, and I'm going to apply it to what our collection needs. We have special knowledge that is different, that sets us apart. And so I think that's how we should develop knowledge, not to try to be everything to everyone. You can't do that, right?
And from your point of view, what makes Canada unique as far as our heritage and or the projects, or, you know, what stands out?
Actually, the CCI is in a unique position that we provide service to all of Canadian institutions. And I believe in all the world, people, you know, who are funded, like the museums, they fund their analytical services for their own institutions. So if you're a small museum, you don't have that. You don't have access to any of this. But in Canadian institutions, we have, any publicly owned institutions can benefit from services from CCI. That, I think, unique to the world.
So, like, our clients enrich the work that's being done in a way.
Yeah. And like, we were at a microphage user meeting. That was what came out, was that, okay, well, this institution had their own tester and they have their own analytical services, but they only do work for them. But if you're not part of that, then you're out. So there's very few, or if any, organizations that would provide services to the masses of smaller institutions that doesn't have money. You have to pay for all the services, right? But, you know, the Canadian institutions are very, very fortunate. They don't have to. A lot of our services are free to them. That is unique. Yeah. And I don't know if the institutions know that, but the rest of the world, they don't. That's not how it works.
I would like to get your advice for an emerging scientist, maybe, if there's any words of wisdom that you would have to share with anybody.
I think it's to be curious and always learning, and look at every opportunity to learn about materials, and keep an open mind, and do the best you can and excel in what you do, and keep improving. And I think over the years, I would say, there's not a day that go by I don't say, I'm learning something today. Whether it is a small thing about material, or just learning how to write better, or how to communicate better. Like, always keep improving and keep moving forward. And also, I would say for CCI, if you were going to work for CCI, I think probably one of the most important thing is to appreciate, you know, we're funded by the Canadian taxpayer to maintain Canadian collection. Keep the big picture in mind. It's a privilege to be here. So make the most of every moment, and use what you know that you've been trained for in undergrad and in graduate schools, and apply it and be flexible. And I'd say always remember it's a privilege to work at CCI. And don't take it for granted. And CCI is a wonderful place. And I think everyone who's been here says CCI is a wonderful place. And the synergy is wonderful. I think take advantage of the synergy and learn from each other. It's a wonderful place.
Season Say's retirement party was held at CCI in October 2018. In this recording, Season talks about the importance of the social life at CCI, and then goes on to tell the story of the first conversation she had with Stefan Mikulski, a senior conservation scientist at CCI.
And then are my coffee buddies, and you're more than my coffee buddies, Ellen, Jane, Kara, Jenna, and you're all here. I think the coffee time is, to me, more than just social. Because there's so much cross-pollination. You hear about who's doing what, and you hear that, and you see what the connections are. And I'm very grateful for that. It's not only just a morale booster, but to me, it's really just part of CCI. And Stefan, I think probably it was about maybe 1987, I had my first conversation with Stefan, because I think we were on the way back or to the ICCG conference in Victoria, and since then, and many a conversation after that, I think what Stefan talked to me about set my attitude to what my job, that this CCI, the existence of CCI, is a great privilege because of the funding that we get from the government, because of the support from management, because of the interacting active working between scientists and conservators, and the support we get from all the staff who is not conservative or scientist, that combination is a privilege. And I had never taken for granted for that my job is not to build my own career, to build reputation, but my job is to make the taxpayers' money count. And to me, it just stuck with me that I keep that always in my in the forefront. And he explained to me at one time using chocolate bars and per capita of chocolate bars or something. I know what he meant, but I couldn't repeat it. But I knew that was a big deal, that the CCI existence is a big deal, and that we need to take advantage of it and benefit not only our Canadian museums, but also in the worldwide community of conservation. Now, I think I'm glad I'm the one who had the last say. Many of you, in my mind, you're so brilliant and gifted and talented. I make jewelry, so this makes sense to you. Many of you are superstars. You are like one of those gems, right? So I recognize you as that. But to me, I don't consider myself those. But I am a very good connector, I must say. I'm a very good, and that's the part that I play the best. And probably that's what you would probably notice. I see connection in people. I see connection in opportunities, and I like to put them together. And that is what I like to do most. And I just congratulate that I get to work with these superstars, all you superstars. And I'm so glad that I'm a part of this.
Thank you to Season C. CCI and Chin, In Our Words, is a production of the Canadian Conservation Institute, Department of Canadian Heritage. Our music is by Lee Rosevere. Production assistance provided by Pop-Up Podcasting. Who would you like us to interview as a part of this podcast? Find us on Facebook at Canadian Conservation Institute and let us know. Next time on the podcast.
In 3 years, you were to make CCI the most important conservation institute in the world. If you can't do that, say now, because if you don't do that, we'll put you in a rowing boat with one oar and push you back to England.